It's episode 5027 of the Peer Advantage Podcast. Welcome to, this is part two. This is a book summary. The book is The Third Opinion, How Successful Leaders Use Outside Insight to Create Superior Results by Saj Nicole Joni, PhD. The last time we did part one, or chapter one, today we're going to actually go through two chapters, chapters two and three. If you missed the last episode, go back and listen to it. It's about 30 minutes long, and that'll get you up to speed. Chapter two is entitled The Three Habits, and Ms. Joni introduced us to these three habits in the first chapter. Hey, welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell, your host here at the Peer Advantage Podcast. You can find the show notes for today's episode by going to the website growgreat.com and just find episode 5027. And we've got extensive show notes and a few links and things over at the website. Other useful resources that you may find helpful over there as well. The book began with a story of a top leader who was facing a complex challenge and realizing that he needed some help. He needed some help to think through the proper decision. But every time that he would think about particular people, he could very easily disqualify these people because, well, they were beholden to him. And so he's going to have to rely, argues the author, on the habit of mind to solve this problem. He needs a third opinion. Throughout his career, he has incorporated some trusted outside advisors into his inner circle. Occasionally, he's had to rely on these people as a sounding board. They are interested in helping him, but they don't have any dog in the hunt, so he trusts them. Now, these aren't relationships that you can cultivate in a moment of crisis. It's one of those things you cannot wait until you need it to go get it. You have to foster these relationships in anticipation of events where you may need help. And so this means you have to cultivate the habit of relationship. And then finally, in addition to seeing that this issue that he is facing, it needs to be addressed immediately, this leader, he needs to be able to push away the urgent things, those things that are merely urgent, on his daily schedule so that he can deal with this, because this is a much bigger deal. The ability to tackle many issues on your plate as a leader and still make time for surprises, and we all face them, is what the author calls the habit of focus. Leaders have to be able to distinguish between the essential and the urgent and how much time to allow for each one of these. Well, the story of our leader, it unfolds as he contacts three people who give him various levels and degrees of help, outside help, a third opinion, if you please. And so his story sparks some questions that the author says we should be asking ourselves as leaders. What kind of network have I built, and how and when do I use it? Are there teachers, mentors, friends, and activities that have been particularly important in my development at some stage of my life? How do I include my spouse? How do I include my significant other? How may I include family members and personal friends in my current leadership circles? When have I had a conversation or ongoing dialogue where I significantly changed my understanding or learned something that I didn't expect? What were the conditions that led to that insight? And then, are there critical areas for me now where I have no thinking partner, or where the thinking partners that I do have are lacking expertise, perspective, maybe some appropriate structural trust? And so it brings us then to chapter three, habit of mind. The habit of mind means you have cultivated the ability to think and lead in a high-speed world of change and interdependencies. There are three facets to this habit of mind: mastery of three levels of thinking, curiosity, self-knowledge, and spotting great talent for your inquiry team. So today's leaders have got to be able to integrate old and new information. We've got to be able to plan more flexibly, and we have to be ready to define the very way that we understand our job, our company, our market. And to do this, leaders have to develop mastery in three basic types of thinking: application, expert, and exponential. Now, keep in mind, this is an integration of all three kinds of thinking that leaders will find their ability to successfully deliver results over time. If you can put all these three together, you'll get the results that you're after. First, she goes into application thinking, mapping the known onto the unknown. Application thinking is focused on planning and implementing well-understood methods in ways that provide replicatable results. And so this helps leaders readily identify the characteristics of a problem and, with the benefit of experience and history, find a solution. Application thinking consumes the greatest share of most managers' mental energy. But then there's expert thinking. Expert thinking invokes deep understanding of a specific subject. So expert thinking begins with people who have developed a deep understanding and an expertise in a specific field of knowledge. Expert thinking is brought to bear when challenges and issues are new or unique. They don't easily fit into a solution by a known method. As a leader, especially if you're a number one, if you're a business owner, you can't be expert about everything. So you need people who are expert at various things, and you need to be able to leverage your own thinking to be expert as well. Now, in many cases, we face issues that are highly technical. And expert thinkers, they bring new perspectives to diagnose. And they also bring the technical know-how and the problem-solving abilities to help us customize an approach. But they also bring with them access to a network of related experts whose thinking might also be brought to bear on various parts of the problem. So yes, expert thinking and application thinking, kind of different heads of the same coin. Exponential thinking, exploring new terrain with new frameworks. Now, the author has already discussed in chapter one, exponential thinking, and how it's the work of developing multidimensional framing that helps leaders see all sides of a complex issue. It's basically the opposite of tunnel vision. This is the most difficult kind of thinking to master, and so it deserves greater attention, and the author gives it greater space in her book. Until you master this, you will not be able to take full advantage of the third opinion. The intent of application thinking is to achieve results that you can replicate. The intent of expert thinking is innovation, customized solutions. But the purpose of exponential thinking is to achieve insight. And this is critical, to achieve insight. The starting point for exponential thinking is curiosity. It's curiosity about what is unknown and about what relationships may be unexplored. And so this means that the inherent nature of exponential thinking is the need to engage with others who bring different perspectives and who are capable of helping you explore issues outside your awareness, outside of your mental models, and outside of your current understanding. Now, this is at the heart. This is at the root. I'm telling you this. This is at the heart of the entire book. This is really at the heart of the third opinion, because you already get by now that the third opinion is brought to the forefront by other people. That's why it's the third opinion, because you've already got your own. Exponential thinking contains two elements. First, expertise in one or more fields of knowledge, and second, the capacity to apply that expertise so that you can explore, you can make sense of the different perspectives, you can unearth and you can validate assumptions, you can envision possible futures in ways that will render new ideas and new insights. Come on, exponential thinking, remember, is all about insights. And so exponential thinking contributes to insight shifts that occur when problems are reframed, when problems are explored from a different perspective, when they are explored at a higher level of context and complexity. And so the author then gives us six steps for exponential thinking. Number one, understand the mental models that guide your thinking. What are the mental models that govern your thinking? Your mental models are made up of assumptions about how your business works. Every business leader, every business owner has assumptions about how their business works. They even have assumptions about how their markets work and what their customers want and so forth. But they're also made up of the fundamental assumptions that you have about the world and how you fit into the world. Our mental models deeply impact how we make sense of things and how we choose to act and how we make decisions. And they develop from individual experience and from our cultural, our intellectual heritages. The starting point for exponential thinking is to develop an awareness of our mental models and those of others. Number two, develop your ability to discern patterns. Now, our ability to see and to recognize patterns is one of the it's one of the fundamental human sense-making capabilities that we have. And as leaders, we need to be looking for patterns constantly. And we need to practice spotting patterns in different situations and in a variety of contexts. Number three, check and recheck for hidden assumptions. You know, much of what we do every day is guided by the assumptions that we hold. And a key part of exponential thinking is unearthing and examining our own assumptions and how they affect our thinking. And there are a lot of tools that can help you unearth assumptions about your business. For example, Six Sigma. Six Sigma is a method that enables you to increase operational results and quality in sustainable ways. But part of the power of Six Sigma is that it uses a structured approach to move from operational conjecture to measurable fact. And when it does that, guess what it does? It reveals some hidden assumptions that are often false, by the way. There are a variety of business building tools like Six Sigma that aim to do the same thing in just about every area that you can imagine of a business operation. Number four, create varied scenarios of the future. Exponential thinkers consider mental models, patterns, assumptions, and then we use these things to develop a portfolio of scenarios for the future. You don't know what the future holds. I don't know what the future holds, but we can imagine, because this is the power we have in being thinking humans. The exponential thinker has the ability and the judgment to create multiple views of the future and then to compare those one to another and determine how probable is one over the other. And then we can commit to a course of action that will allow us, well, it'll allow us to switch it if we need to. It'll allow us to gauge it in real time. Are we on track? Are we off track? Time to pivot, time to iterate, time to do something different. We can figure that out. Number five, look for ways to broaden your line of sight. Everybody is looking for ways to get more value from less. that is the world we live in today. It's been the world that we've been living in for probably 20 plus years. To develop the necessary habit of mind for successful leadership today means that you have got to think very carefully about how you get your information. And you got to think about the source of that information. You've also got to think about the source of the information. Because information is coming at you fast and furious. And as a result, you don't have time to parse the data. You don't have time to consider how reliable it may be. And as a result, we risk making decisions on outdated, incomplete, maybe even distorted information. Most information that reaches us, it has been filtered for perspective. It's been filtered for spin. And when they become too isolated, leaders lose their awareness of the strategies, the norms, the beliefs, the agendas of anybody other than their own team, and maybe even other than them. And that isolation has a really high price. Winston Churchill, he was very aware of this problem. He knew of his own fame. He knew of his own charisma. And he also likely knew he had the power to intimidate some staffers. And so he set up a completely different channel for information, a channel that didn't even report to him. And what that did is it provided him a more pure channel of information. Leaders have to question the source of information they get. Expert advisors in particular fields often have a line of sight. They have a deep knowledge about a field, and they've got early access to information, early access to events. They know things before the rest of us know it. They can spot trends long before it becomes apparent to a wider audience. But as a leader, you have your own line of sight. And our line of sight as leaders, we need to understand it's got limitations as well. And we have to develop relationships with other people to give us a portfolio of other lines of sight that are much broader than our own and different and varied. Number six, invest in your ability to think in the gray space. The higher you move up the leadership ladder, the more your role is to take your organization where it's never been before. And so by the time you get to the C-suite, by the time you get to the CEO spot, or if you're a business owner, you have to be the first person to discover new reality for yourself, new reality for your company, because this is about growth. And that means you've got to push the boundaries of what is known, what's acceptable, what's comfortable, what's legal, what's practical. And that leads you into a land of gray where things just are not clear. Well, what do you do? What do you do when you face a decision that requires you to use judgment in the face of the unknown? Navigating the gray starts with improving your awareness of when and where you are in those gray areas. It's about options. It's about choices. What are they? Each option has its own potential downside, and each one's got its own upside. And there are many, many times where there just is not an obvious choice. Which option's best? Which option is best for your team? Which downside is the most palatable? Which one generates the most passion? The author then migrates to talking about curiosity and self-knowledge. Leaders today have got to have a realistic picture of themselves. As a sidebar, I can tell you that there are many, many leadership problems that I have been confronted with and experienced with clients, born largely from leaders that just do not have a realistic picture of themselves. They see themselves one way, and everybody else sees them very differently. You've really got to get this right. And this is especially true as you develop thinking partners and you pursue exponential thinking. You need an accurate picture of how you function best within your organization. The author urges us to develop our curiosity. It's hard to explore all the areas that strike our interest, but we have to make time to engage our natural curiosity and to foster it. Curious leaders have a self-confidence that allows them to remain open and inquisitive, and they're deeply aware of context, and they regularly inquire into their own ignorance, looking for their own blind spots and pushing the boundaries of their own knowledge. But curiosity needs guidance and sustenance. And so Ms. Jonah argues, we've got to understand our management style. Now, we've all got some natural preferences in how we work, and you likely developed these very early in your career. So there are about five questions that you can ask yourself. There are many others, but she gets us started with these five. How do I fill up my time? You fill up your time. Is most of your time spent alone? Is most of your time spent in meetings? How do I feel at the end of a day when I've spent time with people or when I've spent time alone? Which energizes me, meetings with others or time alone? What kind of environment do I prefer? What do I want my surroundings to be like? Do I need chaos and energy, or do I need quiet, purposeful activity? Those types of questions will help you come to a better understanding of your natural preferences in how you work. Now, on page 48 of the hardcover version of the book, which is the one I've got, the author illustrates with a chart, and then she walks you through ways that you can use this chart so that you can discover your own management style. She then talks about be aware of your style of thinking with others. You know, there are some leaders that enjoy debating with colleagues who hold strongly opposing views, and they kind of like that devil's advocate type of engagement so that they can look for potential flaws. Now, other people, they really prefer a discourse, and they like to start out with kind of an outline situation and then explore all the facets that they can. There are other people who are much more intuitive, and they prefer to listen to a discussion before following their gut instinct. So knowing yourself is going to help you know when to ask for a third opinion. How do you process information? Now, there are some companies and they demand written briefs. And there are other companies and they rely more heavily on presentations. Well, what works best for you? You're the leader. What works best for you? Do you learn visually, or do you need a conversation to sort things out? Well, it's up to you to ensure that you get the information in the format that you can integrate best. But you've also, simultaneously, you've got to develop your own capacities for processing information, because sometimes you can't control the way important information gets to you. So you need to be versatile. Don't believe your own hype. We live in a day and age where personal marketing, personal branding is becoming increasingly a larger part of professional life. All you got to do is go over and look at LinkedIn profiles and even your own, and you'll see this. Be careful. Your branding's important, but it's antithetical to exponential thinking and the habit of mind. Do not believe your own hype. Spotting great talent for your inquiry team. Your awareness has to extend to your team. It's one thing for you to understand your styles and your strengths, your weaknesses, your capacities. That's important. But you also need to know those things about your team. That's equally important. So give that some time. Give that some effort. Know the difference between advisors and thinking partners. The author, again, goes back to Clark Clifford, and it's a Clark Clifford quote from his book. He was an advisor to presidents, from which the author gets her title, The Third Opinion. He makes a distinction that's crucial to understanding what's required in inner circle inquiry for leaders today. And he uses the example of the two presidents that he served, President Kennedy and President Johnson. Now, you probably couldn't get two more diverse, two different kinds of presidents. And here's what he writes in his book, and I'm quoting, "The relationship I had with each man, Kennedy and Johnson, was quite different. When Kennedy called on me, it was usually to play a clearly defined role on a specific problem, from the aftermath of the Bay of Pigs to the Still crisis. Johnson, on the other hand, wanted my advice or observation on almost anything that might confront him. Johnson asked me to participate in important national security meetings, which otherwise involved only government officials, something Kennedy never did. In these meetings, I would say little unless asked to comment by the president, and even then, I shared my views with him later, only in private." End of quote. Well, his description captures the essential distinction between two important but different advisory roles. That is, the role of the advisor and the role of the thinking partner. President Kennedy, he turned to Clifford mainly as an advisor, so he called on him as an expert to engage primarily in expert thinking. Clifford proposed alternatives and solutions to Kennedy's tough domestic and international political problems. But for Johnson, Clifford's role took on quite a different dimension, combining expert thinking with a broader realm of exponential thinking. He would ask Clifford to take on advisory assignments, to read and research materials, and then report back on critical issues and helping find specific alternatives and solutions to tough problems. Distinguishing between these two roles, that will help you develop the advisory network that's most helpful to you and to your leadership challenges. So as you start to think about this, you're likely going to see people in your life who may be good advisory resources, but they're not as talented as being thinking partners. And these distinctions will help you figure out what kind of thinking needs to be done and will help you clarify the range of resources that you may need on your inquiry team. It's a term that the author uses. Emulate those you admire. She winds down this chapter by talking about our need to develop the habit of mind. And part of that is that it's important for us to understand how other leaders develop themselves and their thinking. There is no one right way. Be curious. Study other leaders. There are people that you admire. Maybe they're famous, maybe they're not. Study them. Learn from them. Inner circle conversations are private and confidential. Look for them. It's a lifelong process of learning. You must develop exponential thinking. Keep your curiosity alive. Know yourself. Develop the ability to master those gray spaces. Learn and be inspired by other leaders so that you can raise the bar on your own performance. This is the habit of mind of a successful leader. And there you have it, chapters 2 and 3. Next time, we're going to talk about chapter 4. And chapter 4 is habit of relationship. I hope you'll buy the book and dive into it more deeply. Again, it was written in 2004, but the information is still very valid and very helpful. Mostly, I hope you will consider what you can do to elevate your own leadership and your life. It's what I call the trifecta of business building: getting new customers, serving existing customers better, and not going crazy in the process. That encompasses everything that you do, everything. My work focuses mostly on helping business owners and leaders accomplish that last one, not going crazy in the process, because that permeates everything. That permeates every facet of a leader's life, both professionally and personally. Now, let me end with a call to action. If you're a small business owner and you are interested in being part of a roundtable group of other small business owners from around the United States, then I want you to go check out thepeeradvantage.com. The peer, P-E-E-R, thepeeradvantage.com. I'm starting the process of building two groups of just seven business owners from around the United States to come together as thinking partners to help each other grow their business, to grow their leadership, and to grow their lives. And I'd love it if you would go over there. There's a pretty short application. It commits you in no way to anything other than a phone call. You and I will then be able to jump on a phone or jump on Skype, and we'll be able to have a conversation, and we'll see if this is something that you're interested in. We'll see if it's something I'm interested in. And thepeeradvantage.com. There you go, kids. Lord willing, next time we'll do chapter 4. Thanks again. I greatly appreciate you listening. Check out the website, growgreat.com. Again, my name is Randy Cantrell, coming to you from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. I appreciate you. Welcome and greetings from inside the Yellow Studio.